Hi, everybody. Jack and I are doing a new podcast about HBO's Westworld, and joining us is the wonderful Mike Bloom. Each week, we will recap, theorize, and discuss the awesome new HBO show, Westworld. The podcast is available on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are sold for free. So if you enjoy this episode, be sure to subscribe. So sit back and relax and enjoy our first episode of Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike. From Raleigh, North Carolina and New York, New York, it's Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike, a podcast dedicated to HBO's Westworld. Each week we will discuss, theorize, and recap each episode. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And welcome to Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike. My name is Jay.
My name is Mike.
And I'm Mulva.
What?
Mulva.
Yeah, from Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Is there something that rhymes with...
Dolores is was her name.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a deep cut.
You're very lucky that I only started recently watching Seinfeld for this first time and got to that episode like 3 weeks ago, or that would have gone even more over my head than it did about 30 seconds ago.
A tough one, but I figured someone would get it. Okay, I'm out of here.
I'm power down.
Yeah, usually you pander to like the most common denominator. That was a deep cut.
Because they said Dolores like 30 times in the episode. And right when he first said Dolores, I go, Mulva.
Now, if Jack is spouting out Seinfeld references, do we have to put him in cold storage? Does that mean he's glitching out?
I think so.
up.
It's like, I know that face. That's Jack.
Yeah.
Welcome everybody to the show and welcome Mike Bloom to the Jay and Jack fold. Very excited to have you as one of the hosts on this show. So welcome.
I am so excited to be here. I said this before coming on the air. I mean, I'd drop anything to podcast with you guys as a huge Lost fan. It's honestly something that if I told myself 5 years ago I'd be able to do this, I would slap myself for actually saying that would come true. And then to talk about this show, which really came in gangbusters from the premiere. They rode in on their own horses and started blasting away any sort of conventions that we might have built up about this show to begin with. I have just become infinitely more pumped to cover this show with you guys.
Same here. Like, watching it yesterday, and then, but like, just every, like, it was just every minute was just so juicy. I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited to get the podcast about this show.
Can I just say, though, the fly on the eye part, I almost gave up on the show. I go, just get that fly off the eye. I can't take it.
Really? It bugged you that much?
I don't like things on eyes and stuff, even though I wear contacts. Mm-hmm. And it just, when it was just sitting there, I'm like going, oh, get the fly off.
There's so you weren't going to podcast about it because of this whole fly?
I was just close to, it's my kryptonite. I was like, oh, please stop.
Well,
no, I can definitely understand that.
Well, Mike, hopefully we don't, maybe a couple weeks in you realize that we're not that great. And you're like, whatever preconceptions you had about us.
Well, for now, I've arrived on the train in the station, and I am pumped to either don the white hat or the black hat or something in between.
awesome. In preparation for this episode, I think just about everybody watched the movie, or at least do a little bit of research. What did that give you any like thoughts or preconceived notions of what this would be like? Because it seems like it's going a lot more deeper than the film did. Which was essentially just Jurassic Park with cowboys.
Yeah, that's the thing that I thought. Obviously, the Michael Crichton connection is there, but obviously, having seen Jurassic Park before Westworld, I definitely knew it was kind of building the foundation for what Crichton was going to build out a little bit more in Jurassic Park. It seemed like Westworld, the movie, was a lot simpler in terms of the plot. I was ready for things to really go haywire, and even when they did, it really didn't happen until later in the film, whereas Jurassic Park, you get like a good 30 minutes of introduction, and then things go crazy, 0 to 60 almost immediately. But I guess in comparison to the film, it seems like we're sort of taking the skeleton to sort of, I guess, mirror the opening credits, and we're sort of putting on, we're dipping it in that milky substance, but we're creating a different type of skin and muscular system to form a different type of being. The setting and the concept obviously already existed from the film, but they're doing something completely different with it.
Yeah.
Well, they did. There was a call out to a couple of call outs to the movie, though, because the one part where he says you used to be able to shake their hand and could tell who they, you know, who the robots were. And that's how back in the movie, that's how you could tell who the robots were by their hands, because they didn't do hands well, is what they said. So few call outs to the movie. But you got to remember, too, the movie, though. When was Jurassic Park made?
90. Yes.
Or 93.
OK. The original Westworld was made in 73.
I didn't realize it was directed by Crichton, too, which was like, oh, I didn't know he directed the movie.
So it's a different, you know, it's a different era, different, you know, I mean, they could only do so much.
It's true.
It had Yul Brynner. I mean,
Yul Brynner. So in part of my research for the show, and it's something I do sometimes, I go into like a Wikipedia of Vortex, and I started reading about Yul Brynner. I started reading about his life, and it derailed the entire research I was doing for this week's episode. But I think
He came out when he died of cancer, lung cancer, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he actually did a commercial before he died on the hazards of smoking.
Yes, he did. That was in the Wikipedia article that I read. But back to the original movie, I think it had that 70s pacing. It took forever to get. But back then, I was probably like, oh my God, this is amazing.
It was a cool movie. When you're 11, that's a cool movie.
Yes, definitely.
And if you're a Western fan and you like, and that was just a big deal back then.
If you're a Roman fan, not so much.
Not so much. No.
Well, that's actually, I was going to bring that up in kind of wrapping up this movie discussion. But with the other worlds in the movie, do you think that's going to be brought into the TV show? Like with Roman world and what was the other one? Like medieval world or something?
Medieval world. Yeah, which was probably, I thought that was probably the most gruesome, because that ended up with like the guy stabbed and trying to, you know, make advances onto women. So that was probably the most lascivious one. It's an interesting question, because obviously we saw after the first 15 minutes a lot of what goes on behind the scenes. In the movie, there was one central hub that manned those three worlds. We don't know if that's exactly the case here. It seems like Westworld has enough on its own hands to let alone have, you know, Bernie and Ford have to deal with the other two worlds as well. So maybe they'll end season one with like a pan out of the central hub to show not only Westworld, but not only Roman world and medieval world, but a myriad of other worlds as well.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting kind of reading in articles after the episode, and even in the episode, you see they say this, that Dolores is the oldest character there, or host there, been there for 30 years. But the creator is talking about how they kind of view Westworld as being around as long as Disneyland's been around, which is like 60 years. So it kind of gives a certain context to your point, Mike, of like there could be multiple worlds that we haven't even seen yet. And they even kind of alluded to it as well, that these people think these hosts are for the rich people, you know, paying to, you know, live out whatever adventures they want to have. But the people that own the corporation have different ideas of what they want to use these robots for.
I would say there has to be more than just Westworld. Because not everybody, like to me, that would be a dream come true to go do something like that. But not everybody's into Westerns and stuff like that. So, you know, there has to be other worlds. I mean, after 60 years.
And I'll say in terms of like where it could go, one of the interesting things I found about, or that I've seen about this show, is they paused it for a while to do some reworks and re-edits and reshoots for the pilot. I think it was like $25 million just for this pilot and $100 million for the season, which is insane to think about. But when you actually see the product, you can kind of see it. But they went back and they kind of did the story arc for, I think, 6 seasons total, like 6 years total. So a beginning, middle, and end, and they kind of wrote everything out. Unlike, you know, some of these other shows that we have, like Lost, maybe, that didn't quite have it all worked out and it kind of made some people mad.
BSG.
But at least BSG, he said, like, he's making up as he goes along. So there's, like, no preconceived notion that there was some.
I had no issues with it. I'm just pointing it out.
But this show has a very tightly knit, according to Jonathan Nolan, and I'm blanking on his wife's name. But Liz. I could just look it. She didn't take his last name, actually.
Ms.
they have a very tight knit story for six seasons, I believe, or 6 years. And that's got to be exciting, right? Like, did you guys feel that watching this episode in terms of knowing or at least setting up things years down the line?
I mean, I definitely felt this setup. And again, I think we're going off the skeletal structure of the film, which is this idea of the androids kind of going off the rails a bit and starting to kind of have their own individual wills and start to remember their non-ordained paths and possibly starting to attack their creators. So I think it's definitely there, and obviously they were hinting to it even with the final shot of the first episode. I'll be intrigued to see where we are at the end of the season and whether, because they're plotting things out for possibly 60 episodes, are they going to play things a little bit slower, or are they going to be much faster and looser? I know before this premiere, there was an interview with the creators where they said, you know, we're not going to do an anthology where a different group of people come to Westworld every season. We're going to keep track with the same group of characters. So I feel like they're going to lean on the slower, plottier elements rather than going fast and loose.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And from what I've heard of reviews of the first few episodes, it seems like it's definitely taking its time, which I'm perfectly okay with. It's Lisa Joy, by the way, going back and answering that question. But before we get to the recap here and digging into this episode, I do think it's probably a good idea to go over the characters. I feel like sometimes with new shows, there's all these new characters, and if you know you're watching and just casually watching and listening to this podcast, like, who's that guy? Which one's that guy? Who's this? So let's do a quick rundown of some of the main characters here. You guys cool with that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So first up, top billing. I mean, a lot of big actors in this show, but Anthony Hopkins as Dr. Robert Ford, who seems to be the creator or the designer of these robots. And it pretty good. I mean, pretty cool guy. A little mysterious. I'm sensing a little bit of nefariousness about him. Or it's almost he's bored and he wants to actually kind of shake things up a little bit. And we have Evan Rachel Wood.
Has he already done it? That's the
That's the question.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Evan Rachel Wood as Dolores Abernathy, the oldest host in the park, 30 years there.
Born in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh, is she? I didn't.
I didn't know. I clicked on it because I really wasn't sure who she. I've heard the name, but I wasn't sure what she's been in before.
Evan Rachel Wood. Yeah, I remember her. The very first thing I remember seeing her in was Across the Universe, which I don't know if you guys saw that. It was like a musical that used Beatles music. Yeah, it was her and Jim Sturgess. But I also remember her. She was in The Wrestler. She played Mickey Rourke's daughter.
Oh, okay.
Didn't she get nominated for something in that, or was it only Mickey Rourke that got nominated?
I think it was Mickey. It might have been Tomei as well. I'm not sure.
That's right. Next up is a very intriguing character, Ed Harris's The Man in Black. Or I've seen
not again. Not again.
Can't give that guy a name.
Imagining Allison Janney in a cave somewhere.
I also like the. I've seen other work talking about him as the gunslinger, which was Yul Brynner's character. In the film, which is basically just like a complete, you know, carbon copy of his character from The Magnificent Seven.
Dun.
But yeah, very interesting. His character seems to intrigue me the most out of all of them that I've seen so far.
Seems like a nice guy.
But he's up to something, and it's like, what is he up to? So I'll be excited to see how that kind of plays out. James Marsden, always the second fiddle to any other male lead character. He continues that with his character of Teddy Flood.
At least he gets the girl this time. Isn't he the one in The Notebook who, like, he is clearly trying to court Rachel McAdams, but she clearly is in love with Ryan Gosling?
Well, exactly.
I have no idea if I'm playing to a blank wall here, but I'm playing to the entire listenership, I guess.
No, you're right. So he was runner up there, but he was runner up here because Ed Harris killed him.
That's true. But then, Hector got a killing as well.
Yeah, it's true. He was also Cyclops, and he kind of was runner up to Wolverine with Jean Grey. He's really good at playing these characters. Oh, he was also in Superman Returns, and he was Lois Lane's significant other while Superman was away.
Also on 30 Rock.
Yeah, he lands the girl on 30 Rock. He's Liz Lemon's final boyfriend.
That's true. There you go. See? He's not always the bridesmaid, never the bride. Then we have Thandie Newton playing, is it Maeve or Maeve Millay?
I think it's Maeve, isn't it?
Maeve Millay?
Yeah, I'm going to say Maeve.
Seems to be the lead brothel woman. Is that the technical term? Jeffrey Wright is Bernard Lowe, kind of senior program manager guy. He seems to be kind of enamored with Ford's work, but almost blindly trusts him a little bit too much, I'm feeling.
Yes.
Yeah, I wonder if, I guess we're going to see the hierarchy of the larger Westworld contingency more, but I wonder exactly, is Bernie Ford's number two, or does Ford have a bunch of other subservient people as well in different divisions?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Definitely interesting to see. This next actor is a fan favorite from Lost, Rodrigo Santoro.
Well, I guess he's more favorably known as a hot Carl from Love Actually.
Oh, it's I've never seen Love.
He's the one that I think it's Laura Linney like has a crush on, and rather tragically, it turns out that they can't get together because she has to take care of her brother. But he's stock cast as like the hot guy in The Office in Love Actually.
Gotcha. Yeah, and he's also well known at, he was billed as the Brazilian Tom Cruise, I think, when he was cast on Lost as Paulo, of the Nikki and Paulo duo. But Hector Escaton, as the bandit that ends up
the bad guy.
The bad guy. And there's more characters there as well. There's kind of the big ones that I kind of want to jump into. Any other characters you want to kind of bring up? Oh, we also have her dad. I'm trying to remember. We have Lee Sizemore, played by Simon Quarterman. He seems to be the writer.
I was gonna say that's the douchey British guy.
Yep. he plays it well. He plays it well. Yeah, there's a lot of. Yeah, Peter Abernathy seems to be a catalyst character. Played by Lewis Hurtum.
What about Clementine Pennyfeather?
Clementine Pennyfeather.
That's the best name in the cast, I think.
She is one of the brothel members, correct? I want to be respectful of their profession, and not use.
It's the oldest one.
Yes, it's true. It's true. All right, so those are the cast of characters, and let's jump into the recap, guys. What do you say?
Do it.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. So we have our first episode, and it kind of starts from the perspective of the hosts, where we're kind of digging into Dolores's story. She seems to be asking to recall these events that happened to her, and it kind of goes through. It's a bit of a, I don't know if it's a bait and switch, but kind of introducing Madsen's character to the show, and I'm the way it was set up to me is like, oh, he's gonna be one of the people, kind of one of the actual guests of the park. And
I thought the same thing.
Same. And I think that was expected, was that he comes in on the train, you know, he gets pointed out by the sheriff to bring down Hector. It seems like he's going through the simulation. We're supposed to see things through his eyes, kind of like James Brolin and I forget the character of Peter in the movie
Mustachio.
But
Man.
I think things take a little bit of an interesting
Richard
turn
Benjamin.
When he, that's who it is. Yes, the man with two first names. Yes. But when he first sees Dolores and Dolores says, "You came back," that's probably the first little question mark that gets raised in your head. Because again, if you know the world of Westworld, you know that these androids get shut down and basically have their memories reestablished every morning, so that she wouldn't, in effect, remember who he was unless he was involved in the simulation already.
Ah, see, you're a lot. This is why you're on the show, because you're a lot smarter than Jack and I. I wasn't even thinking that.
Well, I was thinking too, when he runs into the guy the first time, he gets off the train and the guy bumps into him. He turns to go for his gun, but then he stops. So it was the guy he ran into, one of the visitors, because he can't shoot a visitor.
Well, he can. It just, it's not going to hurt him, right?
Well, I just say, he looked and he goes, okay, I can't. Now, see, at first I thought the whole time too that he was real.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, but it would have ruined the surprise that we have, when he does get shot.
And it's one of the main differences between the movie and the show is in the movie, they couldn't shoot the guests, right? But here they can still shoot, but for some reason the bullets, the way they hit the visitors, it's almost like a BB gun, or even less than a BB gun. It doesn't really hurt them. It
doesn't do anything.
Which is a great reveal, because we're going to following Teddy's love story here with Dolores, and she, you know, he goes in for the kiss. She's like, I have to get back to my father. And then shots happen at the house. He goes to see what's going on. There's these two, you know, nefarious crazy guys.
they took all of Ben Linus's milk for a cereal.
He takes care of them quickly. And as Dolores is outside tending to her father, the man in black arrives, and we quickly learn that Teddy is not a human or a visitor. He is just part of the plan. One of the hosts of the show. Digging into go ahead.
Wait, do you think the mom is anybody? Because we never see the mom's face, right?
No. Well, yeah, I guess we don't, huh?
No, we just see her corpse.
Yeah.
We just see her corpse, and she's still warm, according to the one guy. So
nobody judge you for it.
This wouldn't be like an HBO show if there wasn't so much lascivious stuff right. going on. Considering that it did, they were a little conservative, though. It took them a good 17 minutes to get their first boob shot of the episode.
Yes.
It's true. It's like, we're not going to be like Game of Thrones.
No, right? No. We're going to build up to here. It.
By the way, let's blow someone's face out from the back.
That was shocking. I know the fly on Dolores' eye freaked Jack out, but the whole face being blown off, that was
That didn't bother me.
It didn't bother you? Okay. That's good to know.
That didn't stun me at all. It's like, okay.
Bernard, lead programmer, he notices the hosts are exhibiting an odd behavior, and we meet with Robert. What's the term that he used for... what Robert's putting into
reveries. So essentially they are, what Robert is doing and what Peter has sort of built out is that Robert is allowing them to, as they're playing through this day over and over and over again, there is sort of a subconscious that builds, even though their memories are being erased. And sort of what the reveries do is a higher level of the technology in these androids that allows them to access that subconscious to alter their movements a little bit more to make them look more human.
And nothing wrong can ever come of that.
No.
No, of course not.
After recent updates, Westworld Sheriff malfunctions in a shocking, or not, just even like slightly disturbing fashion. And this is where I got to give credit to like the pacing and directing and just the acting of it, is as a viewer, I was so bought into these characters, it didn't seem fake, but when they started like malfunctioning, like the sheriff, it was like really disturbing or really off-putting in a certain way.
Yeah, we'll talk definitely about Peter Abernathy's final stand, I guess, before he gets put in cold storage, but that actor was incredible in that one scene. He was able to show that both tendencies of being an android and a human at the same time, which again, there is one second where I dropped my skeptical guys and really thought that he was a robot. That's amazing to pull off nowadays.
Yeah, definitely. And it wasn't even like a CG, insane special effects thing. It was just good acting, which was cool. Jack, your old man quote here should be like, that's what it used to be. It was better back then.
That's how we get it back with the real movies.
Shortly after.
It is better to use real, you know, real actors instead of the CGA stuff.
And then shortly after that, another host who enjoys the milk malfunctions and slaughters a number of other hosts. And that convinces Teresa to pull the updated hosts out of Westworld. Elsewhere, one of the newcomers, the gunslinger, or as the man in black, as he is known, is on his own mission. And he takes poker dealer guy and tortures him. He wants to find out more, and he scalps him, and there's like a map or something in his head.
Yeah, right. That's so strange. Is that like Westworld's version of like, if found, please return to this area? Why else would you print a map of how to get, I guess, to Westworld's hub on the heads of your androids?
Now, my only question is, the guy's out in the middle. He's torturing him out in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
Was there an electric golf cart to go pick up the dealer?
Like, well, in the movie, a horse.
Because it's state of, because remember in the movie they had state of the art, but they had electric golf carts to pick up everybody. So,
well, some technologies you just can't improve on. But my thing the whole time, like while he's doing all this, like, isn't, I guess it's a really big world, but isn't anybody like tracking what he's doing right now? Like, why isn't there any like alarm bells that the man in black is doing what he's doing?
Yeah, I guess we have to question about what exactly the tracking system is. I know that they obviously have that giant topographical map of Westworld that allows them to kind of zoom in, but you'd think that they put like trackers in all their droids, right? That they'd be able to notice, oh, this guy is going rogue. What is he doing out in the middle of like the, you know, the high Sierras? But maybe they just feel, isn't the stereotype of the Old West that sort of anything goes and you can do what you want? Maybe they just thought it was part of the experience.
I guess, but it, I,
but, what, but yeah. once he's been killed, or you know, you still have to bring him back, right?
Yeah, because they have to like kind of repurpose him.
Yeah, so like I said, in the movie, they would go pick him up.
If there's a little bit of a theory here, I think it's he says he's been going there for 30 years. At that point, whoever he is, he's not there just to do the normal stuff. But could he somehow be connected to the corporation and what their future plans are? But he would probably know what that whole scalp. I don't know. There's something about him, and it seems weird to me that nobody's paying attention, or it seems like nobody's paying attention to him doing whatever the heck he wants.
What if the man in black is like the Slugworth to the Willy Wonka of Westworld? That he is the competition that has been trying to infiltrate it and secretly get its secrets.
That would have been horrible if Slugworth would have scalped Charlie.
God.
That might have killed the movie. I don't know.
Might have.
Everlasting Gobstopper, where are they?
We have Peter. Dolores' father, Peter, finds a picture of a woman, it seems like, in Times Square.
Who's the woman? Is it his wife?
No, I think it's just some guest that was there that had a picture.
Yeah, my assumption would be that, because I know in the movie they said you have to like basically just keep away all your personal possessions because you don't want to bring anything anachronistic into that world. And I guess somebody had snuck a photo in. I'm surprised that didn't happen more. Maybe they usually catch it when like things drop into the dirt, but this time it didn't. I don't know. My wife had a theory that because, who knows how this land was constructed? Maybe the land existed beforehand, and this was a relic from what existed before Westworld. That could be something we can put a pin in.
Honestly, right, that makes more sense to me than, like, because if you're going to Westworld, why do you need that picture? Like, what good does that, like, why would you, like, smuggle it in, I would assume?
It's good luck charm.
Maybe. But I like the idea that it was there before.
I do like that, yeah.
So maybe just have your wife on the show with us.
I just boomed myself from my new.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for being here. Thanks for playing along.
He starts behaving strangely, and he
it messed him up.
Yeah, like he starts to have similar things to what the sheriff was going through, and he tells a secret to Dolores. And she goes into the town to try and get some help. Teddy is there, but Lee, the kind of storyteller guy, is arranged so they can pull out all of the bad hosts that had the bad update. He bumped up the weak timeline for Hector to come to town, and they basically come to town and just start killing everybody.
This was my favorite part of the episode.
You just like
the saloon version of Paint It Black? Was that what did it for you?
It was just, I loved the music, was just perfect. I just thought it was great. Obviously not the violence part, but it was good too. But it was just like the music fit the scene perfectly.
So I don't know if anybody read about this, but the piano roll, the Nickelodeon or the player's piano, that they have there is actually real player roles that they had. I think it was Paint It Black was a modern song, and also Black Hole Sun was another one that was there. But they have this company that still makes piano rolls in California, and they actually got those made specifically once they got the rights to the songs.
Really?
So it was a real piano roll playing, and they actually brought in the course, like the actual symphonies and everything later on, but the basis of it is a real piano roll. So that was kind of cool. And it's also a cool way to kind of bring in modern music to it, which I thought was kind of neat.
Yeah, which again, well, obviously that takes place in an indeterminate period in the future where this type of technology exists, but it's fun if at this time they consider those types of songs to be as antiquated as we think songs from the Old West are now. I think that's a fun way to kind of place it in the realms of history.
That is a good point. That's a really good point. But Teddy is killed in the gunfire, unfortunately, because Dolores, you know, just has to get in trouble. And Dolores, after kind of the aftermath of everything, Hector gets shot through the neck. And he's like, I did it. And poor Lee.
Get a
like,
picture of it.
Because Lee was kind of waxing poetic about how awesome his speech was that he wrote and everything for him.
I love that.
And Dolores is knocked out as well. Robert Ford questions Peter in a really like dark scene. Like the whole time I was like, Robert, what? Get out of there. I think he's going to like rip your face off. Because the whole in my mind, I was thinking, Anthony Hopkins, Oscar-winning actor, he's really important. I was like, hey, he's probably just going to get killed off in the first episode, so he doesn't have to do this TV show. That's what was in my mind, so I was like, he's going to get killed, but it didn't happen.
I had one eye on the screen and the other eye on my Shakespeare anthology to look up all the references that Peter was making in that scene.
Do you want to dig into him there? If you have any greater knowledge about that?
Yeah, so I can look into them. I know that there's a wide variety. I mean, a lot of them are pretty surface level, you know, things like when we're born, we cry, we come on this great stage of fools. I think that's a reference to King Lear, and it's talking more about infancy, but I think in that instance, Peter is more so representing the fact that he has kind of come into his own now. He's once was blind, but now he sees and he sort of realizes the fools he's surrounded by. He does conflate two plays at once when he does the "By most mechanical and dirty hand, I shall have revenges on you both." They're both sort of revenge quotes, but they're from two completely different things. And the secret that you mentioned before that he whispers to Dolores of these violent delights have violent deaths. You can pretty much know what it means without even looking at the Shakespeare origin. It's, hey, violent means lead to violent ends, that you are doing violent things in our town. There's a good chance that we are going to violently turn on you in the end.
Yeah, and it was really cool. And Robert kind of plays it off as, oh, he was a Shakespearean actor, you know, two generations ago before he was a sheriff and stuff like that. So it's part of that memory recall. But again, like I was talking about earlier, Robert Ford kind of seeming slightly nefarious. Like, to me, in the way he's in portraying or acting that scene, like, he knows that it's not just some memory recall. Like, he seems to know that these hosts have taken like an evolutionary step in a certain direction. What are your guys' thoughts there?
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting the way he defines evolution. I think he says earlier on in the episode, when kind of monologuing to Bernie, that, you know, evolution forged the creation of sentient life using one tool, the mistake.
Yeah.
And I think he's even said something before that about how, you know, basically forgive me for the mistakes that I have made. And so what he seems to believe is that, yes, I might be doing things wrong, and yes, some people might die, but it's for the greater good to create this perfect technology. But then he said something to kind of negate that when he says we're pretty much done evolution-wise because we've created beings that can essentially rise from the dead, like Lazarus emerging from the cave. So I'm so curious as to who he is, if he will turn out to be like our John Hammond analog that's just sort of a jolly old man that's over his head, or if he really is up to something a little more nefarious. I'd have to think it's the latter.
Yeah, because John Hammond, there's like this kind of childlike innocence about John Hammond, and that's almost like what his downfall is. Because it's one of my favorite scenes from Jurassic Park when he's talking about the flea circus that he put together. And, you know, I can't remember the girl's name, but she kind of says, you know, these fleas are killing people in this part. So, but it's still just like there's not a respect for what they actually created. But there, I think in the opposite there for Robert is he does respect what he's created. And there's like this deep knowledge of, or at least it seems that way to me, there's a deep knowledge of what he's doing. But Peter I'm sorry. Robert explains the behavior of Peter away, and everybody seems to buy it, which again is like, ah, you guys are just too trusting. Or maybe I just watched too many TV shows to trust anyone. but Dolores' question by the Westworld peeps, she seems to answer all the questions correctly. She has a new father when she comes back to the Westworld because Peter and a lot of the malfunctioning people are put into cold storage, which again was kind of sad. There's Peter seemed to have kind of tears welling in his eyes as he was being put away in cold storage. And once there's kind of seeing all those like just naked hosts being put away, a part of me was just like, God, that's going to be an insane like army of the dead that's going to come back and like take
you. You know, and especially since when we saw cold storage, it was leaking, so it's not exactly that airtight. You, if you leave a gaggle of inoperable androids down there in your building, 83 floors below, waiting to come get you, like that's good. They're going to come up sooner rather than later.
Yeah, totally, totally. And it'll be fun to see. At least I hope it comes up, but there's no way they keep them and show it to us as an audience without that coming back later. There's no way.
Unless they want us to believe that.
I don't know. But just, it's like, that's just so much potential for like a really awesome, you know, action sequence. It would be hard to pass up. Plus they're spending so much money on these episodes. They have the money to do it. So Dolores kind of goes back to living her day. We referenced a little bit earlier that kind of the last scene of the episode is a little fly lands on her neck. And we, as we learned earlier in the episode, they can't kill any living creature, but she casually kills the fly, which kind of just signals that things have changed.
I talked about the fly in the eye. The sheriff had a fly in his face. You see flies on a lot of the robots, but that's
The Wild West was a disgusting place in terms of hygiene. I think
exactly.
Doesn't old Clementine, when she smells Teddy for the first time, she's like, you don't have that rind on you.
Yeah. You don't stink.
Thoughts on the first episode, guys. Anything else we want to dig into or main things about this episode that we want to talk about?
There's a lot. I feel like I feel like we should. I want to talk a little bit more about the Man in Black and his previous history. Slugworth theories aside,
I like the Slugworth theory.
The fact that he's been coming and going here for 30 years, and he really seems to know the lay of the land. I just wonder what his connection was. Do you think it's specifically to Westworld? If there were other places, do you think he's checked that out? Do you think he just has a personal history with the company and now he wants to go deeper? Obviously he's the most mysterious character on the show right now, but you have to wonder exactly why he's digging in so deep and really blowing a hole in the reality of this world.
Well, could we also consider him maybe a catalyst for this evolution that's going to come? I mean, would he be that important, or is he just kind of this side story? Like I really don't know, and that's what kind of intrigues me so much about him, because they're leaving him so ambiguous. But he seems to have a path that he's following. He knows where he wants to go. He knows where he wants to end up. But for what reasons, we don't know. It could be as simple as he's a really rich guy. He's been coming for 30 years, and he eventually got bored of the normal stuff, so he's doing something, you know, a lot more nefarious, or a multitude of different things. But I really don't know. He obviously doesn't know enough, because he's searching for answers. He's scalping the heads of people to find out, you know, more information or get more information from people. So he doesn't seem to be coming from a place of knowing, which I guess might cancel out that he's an informant employee, maybe. But I don't know. I like the Slugworth idea. It's funny. There's something there. Or maybe he is a sympathizer to the hosts, and he wants to.
Well, he sure seems sympathetic to the dealer.
That's true. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm gonna drain three. I'm gonna drain half your blood and scalp you.
Yeah, it's just. I don't
but
know.
I feel bad doing it.
Action Jackson, what do you think?
I have a theory.
Is that part of your crackpot theory, or no? You say
that's part of my crackpot theory.
Oh, so you're not.
So I've just been silent on this whole thing because.
But. I really don't know. Some people are referencing him as a gunslinger. It'd be interesting if he did kind of take on that Yule, but he's not a host though, because the other host couldn't kill him. So yeah, it'd be really interesting to see where that goes. It could be a tiny little thread that'll unravel to something a lot larger in the coming seasons. And that's what's kind of interesting, or at least makes it fascinating from like theorizing about a show perspective, is they delayed production of this show to actually write out an overarching mythology and story for seasons. So the potential for that kind of stuff is there, and I think that's what makes it interesting to talk about.
Well, that was risky when they did that too, because remember when they put it on hold, everyone, oh, the show's done before it even gets started. Mm-hmm. So that was a big risk, but I think it's going to pay off.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, this premiere really made a splash. A lot of people are talking about it. I think early ratings seem to indicate it's been HBO's biggest premiere since True Detective, which granted was only a few years ago, but I think it's going to be very well talked about. And if it holds its quality, I think it'll definitely be going on for many seasons to come. You bring up an interesting point about the Man in Black possibly being a host sympathizer. And I wonder, do you think we're going to see eventually one of the humans, whether it's a guest or whether it's someone in Westworld headquarters, decide to, if there is sort of an android uprising, to side with them and to aid them? And if so, who do you think is probably the most likely to do it from the cast of characters we have right now?
What was the I think it was Bernard's like assistant.
Eliza.
Her name. Is it Eliza?
Eliza.
I would see her as a sympathizer, and also see kind of Bernard as a sympathizer. I think people that have like the intimate relationships with the hosts would be sympathizers.
We forgot about Man in Black too. He seemed to rape Dolores too, over and over.
Yeah, so probably not the most sympathetic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Probably not the person you want to get behind of robot rights.
I'm trying to think of something he did that was kind.
Well, he hasn't been kind, but it's like he has interesting methods.
He feels bad afterwards.
Or maybe he's trying to do these things to instigate them to, I don't know. I'm not trying to justify any of his actions.
No, that's true. There could be, granted it's through like very bad means, but maybe he's trying to incite a glitch out of them or incite them to change their behavior pattern by doing something so bad. Or I mean, I think one of the things that Peter might have gotten changed by, it might have not have just been the picture. It seemed like he was remembering something that happened beforehand, whether that was, you know, even though he was dead, watching the Man in Black kill him and rape his daughter, or something from when he was a cannibal out in the middle of the desert in a previous existence. But maybe the Man in Black is saying, I'm going to do something so bad it leaves an imprint in your subconscious, so when these revelries are accessed, it will come to light, and then they're going to change their demeanor based on that.
But Dolores didn't remember him.
Well, but he's referencing it, though. You're not, every time he interacts with her...
But didn't Dolores remember Teddy?
Well, because that was programmed in her to remember
that's
Teddy.
That's the path. Okay. Yeah.
That's okay. The path. But his actions are, he's like, don't you remember? I've been coming here for 30 years. You still don't remember me. Like, he seems to be instigating, or at least referencing the fact that you should know me. You should know me. You should know me.
Like when he says, he hands her the can back. It's sweet like you. And I can't visit you tonight. I have other plans. I gotta slit some of the guy's throat. So
it goes to that, you know, the Shakespeare quote of violence ends to violent means. But maybe that's just his whole process, is to try and instigate some type of mistake or evolutionary step out of them. Remember what's being done to them every single day. Again, maybe kind of going around a lot of different ways just to make something or give us meat to the Man in Black story here, his mysterious background. But it could be it. It seems possible.
What do you think the chances are? It seems like, granted, Teddy got pretty quickly gunned down by Hector and his gang and his sidekick. I think her name is Armistice, ironically enough. I think they're going to make a few more appearances, obviously, as the days go by and they eventually resuscitate themselves. Do you think the chances are, if they do eventually rise up against these human hosts. Do you think there's a chance that the white hat and the black hat will come together, that these two guys with the sort of lawful man, the prodigal son, and the big bandito might join forces to against their common enemy?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Because there was even an element to Teddy that you kind of see when he couldn't, kill the
Man
in
Black.
That there was this kind of sense of revenge there. And when he came back the next day, there was this kind of bit of melancholy to the character where he maybe didn't actually know what happened, but it seemed like there was more weight on his shoulders the next day after that happened, which can kind of continues to contribute to, you know, them remembering what's being done to them and them wanting to fight back.
And I don't know if you noticed, but in the final montage, when it shows the next day, Teddy's sitting in the train, there's a split second where his hand goes over his heart as if he's feeling some sort of phantom pain, and that's where he gotten shot by Hector the day before.
Oh.
That's good call out. Yeah.
Nice.
It's there. It's all being set up, and it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out. Again, it'll just be a horde of old naked robots behind them as they storm the gates.
Nobody wants to see that. Get some clothes on first.
Did you see?
No,
you know
HBO standards. You can have all the boobs you want, but maybe like two or three penises every season.
Taps.
They hit their quota when they did that pan out shot of all the naked robots in cold storage.
I think they had a couple at Deadwood, I think, if I remember correctly. No pun intended there.
Nicely done, Jack. But any other things you want to dig in with the Man in Black here? I like the idea that maybe he's an instigator of some sort to try and incite this revolution.
Yeah. I'm also thinking a little bit about, obviously, we only saw what was going on in Westworld behind the scenes about 15 minutes in, but this Lee guy, this British douche, the fact that he's like a narrative guy, that he's essentially in charge of writing the storylines for these characters, that's something that just really intrigues me, because that's not something that was talked about in the film, but I guess it makes sense, right? You have all these characters. So I wonder if, I feel like writers love to make meta examples of themselves in their shows whenever they can by bringing in a writer. So I wonder how many times are we going to point to Lee throughout the season and say, I wonder if this reflects what the Westworld writers are feeling right now.
That'd be kind of cool. And kind of echoing that kind of difference between movie and TV show, the movie, it kind of flips the narrative of the film, where in the film, it's you're going through the eyes of these people visiting the park. Whereas here, it's you're going through the eyes or the emotions of the hosts themselves, because we expect Teddy to be a visiting person, just kind of like that would make sense for the story, but it's not. He's actually one of the hosts. So it's shifting the focus, or maybe shifting our focus for who maybe we will sympathize with eventually, or at least making us try to sympathize with what the host's plight has been, or what their desire to fight back will be, but it just gives a lot more weight and context to the character. Because even, you know, we're referencing Jurassic Park, I think it's important to, like, you don't care about the dinosaurs too much.
No, we don't follow the T-Rex for the first 20 minutes of the film.
But so it's just it's a nice dynamic shift. And I think it just gives bigger allegorical connotations of like creation, which people like Nolan and Abrams, who produced the show, are no stranger to. So really excited to see how that plays out. Other things we want to dig into.
I'm really like Bernard. I'm a Bernie bro, I guess I'll say, because there's
are we already starting like the shipping names and the fan names and everything? We're digging
exactly
into now? A Bernie bro. I
feel like I'm stealing that from someone, but it'll apply specifically to Westworld. I mean, I love Jeffrey Wright as an actor to begin with. Angels in America is my favorite play, and I love the HBO movie adaptation where he plays a character that I think he won an Emmy for. But he does a great job here. But I love this character because he's also very socially awkward, or I guess so concentrated on his work, where I don't know if you guys caught this, where he's talking with his crew, but he stops in the middle of a conversation to point out someone's like facial tic, and it's clear that he wants to incorporate that into his work. It's clearly he's a workaholic. There, I want to put a pin in something where I think it's an offhanded question. Maybe it's one of the Hemsworth bro, the bulky Hemsworth that's in this this TV show.
I think Todd Hemsworth. Luke Hemsworth. Sorry, Luke Hemsworth.
Luke Hemsworth.
Stubbs.
The elder Hemsworth, I believe.
But he asks Bernie, I think at some point, do you have any kids? And he says no, but there's one establishing shot in one of the Westworld HQ scenes where he's looking at a picture of a child. So I wonder if the no is a lie. Does the no mean he had kids and for some reason they either went away or disappeared? There's a lot to be unlocked, I feel like, with Bernard's personal history and maybe why he connects so much to this project specifically.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the his child died, and the work that he's doing could maybe bring the child back, or maybe I don't know.
Huh.
But it's a good call out though. But there's also just like this kind of youthful joy that he brings to his work that he's doing. Like when he points out the reveries and the little thing with the finger, like there's this sense of like wonderment in discovering it that is more of the John Hammond kind of approach, where it's just like in wonderment of the work that's being done, but not being aware of the fact that what are they creating and what could happen with the things that they're creating.
And contrast that to the other people that seem to work there outside of Ford, who seem to treat this just like a very serious job, you know, or they're begrudgingly saying, oh, we're going to have to rewrite this storyline or we're going to have to bring them in. It seems like his coworkers are much more, I wouldn't use the term serious, but they're probably less invested in the minute aspects of the job than Bernie is.
Well, it's kind of like what
it's Bernie's life. It's not their life.
Well, no, it kind of makes the fantastical mundane, which is one of the things that I think Ghostbusters did well. In that, you know, they're actually capturing ghosts, but they're making it
always
like
comes back to ghosts. But
they make it look like it's like janitorial work. You know, they're smoking and, you know, had a rough day and they're kind of sick, but they're doing these fantastical things. But it's just like a normal work day, or, you know, like anybody has those days at work where it's like, oh, I got to do this now. It's that for them. It's very mundane. And if this has been around for 60 some odd years, you could see where the work would become that way for people.
Yeah. I do want to point to one more thing, which I saw or I noticed was at the very beginning of the episode, back when we think that Teddy is still a human, when he's with Dolores and they're going over this picturesque landscape, I might have misappropriated the term. Did she point out this lead cow called the Judas cow is maybe what it was called? It was the one cow that leads the herd. And, you know, Teddy asks, how do they know where to go? And she says, well, there's this one cow that the rest will follow. I wonder if the final shot and that symbol is sort of foreshadowing that Dolores is going to be the Judas cow.
Ooh,
that if she's the first one that's sort of expressing this lack of order or straying from the path a tiny bit, that she might be the one that incites the rest of these characters to follow suit.
Ooh, I like that. That's a good call out. Again, just these story elements that they're bringing out, that's a really good one to call out. Given her stature is, because even referencing it, the Hemsworth brother, Luke Hemsworth, his character name is Stubbs.
Stubbs.
You know, talking about how she's the oldest person there, and her being that bastion holder that raises the charge, so... that's a very good call out. That's a very, very, very good call out.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's why we're excited to have you on the show, because I can't think of these kinds of things. Awesome premiere episode. Like, it's really hard to get a good premiere or a good pilot that kind of gets you hook, line, and sinker. It's rare. It's really rare. I think this pilot did it masterfully. Like, there wasn't at any point in time I was like, okay. I was engaged throughout the entire episode.
Yeah, and it was pretty slim as well. I feel like, in spite of what we said at the very beginning of the podcast of, oh, maybe this will mean they'll have a propensity to really draw things out, I feel like they did pack a lot into the, what, like, hour and 10 minutes that occurred. We got introduced to a lot of characters, probably some more than others. We got introduced to the central concept, and we got hints of a conflict. That's a lot to get out in that short amount of time.
Yeah. We also had a lot of questions, which is great. Which is great if you're doing a podcast about a TV show.
So we can talk about those questions.
It helps. It's a lot easier when they don't spoon feed you. You go, okay, here's the answer.
Well, it's like you have like a main conflict, and you have this man in black, whatever that's going to end up being, and then you have the corporation, whatever they want to do with these robots, and then you have Robert Ford, what's his motivations? Like, there's just a lot of background Machiavellian type stuff going on that just presented itself really well in the first episode. It'll be exciting to see where it goes. Well, that is what we thought about this episode. It is now time to hear what you guys thought about it. It's time for listener feedback. Gentlemen, what do you say we get into that right now?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. All right, so if you guys want to send in feedback, the email is as follows. It's westworldjjm@gmail.com. Once again, it's westworldjjm@gmail.com. You can email us there with any questions, comments, and or theories you might have. You can also give us a phone call at 385-309-0311. You can call any time, day or night.
Anytime.
With your questions, comments, and our theories, and we will play them and read them on the show. Given that this is our first episode, we have one email here, which is kudos that we actually had an email come in before we even said what our contact stuff was. This is from Ethan, and it says, "Hello, hope you guys enjoyed the show like I did. The man in black, Ed Harris, not totally convinced he is not a host. Thoughts?"
Interesting. So there's a theory that...
Oh, Jack, did we just take your crackpot theory?
Is that your crackpot theory?
Just took my thunder right out from under me. Thanks, Ethan.
Ooh.
Better go.
But
first email, and he just goes, you know what? I'm going to screw his crackpot theory up. Thanks, Ethan. Go ahead. There's a little more to it, but go ahead and finish it, Ethan. Go ahead and just do me in.
Mike, what was your thoughts there?
I feel like Teddy right now.
Exactly. Now you're the second fiddle. Now you know what James Marsden does with the majority of his career, Jack. That's wow. There's a lot in that. I mean, I guess then the question would be, is he a former Westworld host? Is he a host from another world that has sort of broken his way in and has sort of broken ranks? I guess if this goes back to our question of the man in black being a host sympathizer, albeit through some very questionable methods to imprint memories onto them, that could be something that led credence to that theory.
Yeah, and then I guess the thing is, like, through time or somehow or some way, did he find a way to not be killable by the bullets? That would be the kind of, you know, maybe that's part of his exploration of scalping these people.
You want me to finish his theory?
Save it for your crackpot.
Well,
theory.
He's ruined it for me. So
well,
I just
this, then it'll be a quick one. But let's just dig into this before we get into your thoughts. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, in all his explorations, what he's doing. Has he found out a way to be immune to the limitations that these other hosts have, which would need to happen at some point if these hosts would be able to throw like a full on revolution, right?
Yes.
So he has somehow maybe gotten some of the answers and could turn on that. But it's a really good thought. Again, if we're kind of thinking of him as the gunslinger motif, if we're bringing in something from the movie, Yul Brynner's character, the gunslinger, was like...
Just keep adding, Jay. Just keep going.
The main antagonist from the movie.
And let's also say Ed Harris is bald. Yul Brynner was bald.
That's a connection.
I think not.
Yul Brynner was
all bald guys are mean and bad. So,
but Yul Brynner was that was a fashion choice. I think he shaved it for The King and I, and he's kept it that way because of him as like iconic look.
Because he looks angry when he's bald. He looks mean.
but yeah, no, I think that's I think it's a good thought, Ethan. Kudos for our first feedback. Very good feedback.
I wasn't impressed by it.
You've been there, done that, according to Jay.
Oh, man. Well, now that Jack's crackpot theory has been spoiled, we should jump into it.
Stolen.
Stolen.
I sat this whole episode with you guys talking, going,
So you'd say Ethan is the Hector in this case. He rode into your saloon, your theory saloon, and robbed you at gunpoint of your theory. Most of your theory. You still have some residuals left over.
Yes.
Oh, this is great. Best day ever. All right, it is now time for our crackpot theory of the week. Jack, are you ready?
Yeah, sure, I'm ready.
All right, here we go. All right, Jack, what do you got for us?
Hey, what if Man in Black is a robot? What if he's a host?
I've never heard that idea before. That's the most original thing I've heard in the past 10 minutes.
No, I think that Robert Ford has reprogrammed the Man in Black to do these things because he's anti-corporate. You see him talking to Bill the robot. He's having drinks with Bill the robot. Uh-huh. I think the robots are his. I think that's his family. And you almost see it with Bernard because he's just infatuated with the robots, or the host. That maybe that I think Robert is doing something too, because the corporation seems to be, you know, you have the what's the one woman in charge where she just seems to be kind of. What's her name? Is it?
Wants to take over, essentially, or Lee suggests that she should take over.
Yeah, and she goes, it just seems like the corporate people working for the corporate are just there for the money and
Teresa Colin.
Teresa. So you see that Robert is more, like I said, he's hanging out down in the basement with Bill having some whiskey. I think that he's done something to the Man in Black. He's programmed him where he can't be killed.
Ooh.
I was thinking after hearing Ethan / your first part of the theory, I thought that if there's a chance that he is a robot, that this is sort of the latest experiment from Ford, creating this creature that is entirely self-knowing and knows entirely of what it is and what its function is and how it might function based on that. Maybe Ford let it out on purpose. Maybe it decided to escape and Ford neglected to mention it. But there's a case that this... We asked about what is the Man in Black working towards. Maybe it's this, you know, I'm trying to think of, there is this, I feel like there's an example somewhere from in pop culture where there's this creature or this like robot that like betrayed its master. And now it's sort of living its life as a robot out in the world without really actually having any sort of allegiance.
There was a whole TV show like that, wasn't there?
Yeah, maybe. And it escapes me right now. I'm sure there are a myriad of examples, but I feel like if that's true, that's what we might be getting towards, is that maybe the Man in Black is sort of a vigilante here. He sort of is trying to, he's not exactly playing the game as much as he's off doing his own thing. He wants to get deeper into the game, right? That's what he tells the guy that eventually scalps. So maybe he's sort of a rogue agent that was created by Ford, but is now sort of off on his own, knowing that he's a robot and is trying to figure out exactly what that means.
Yeah, I can see that. But to me, he was so similar to Yul Brynner's character. The fact that he was wearing black, he had that, you know, stone face where he just kind of, you know, where he just had that killer look. So I believe 100% that he's at least a former host.
But I like the idea that he is Robert Ford's agent. But there's so many different ways you could go with it.
It's Anthony Hopkins. They just wouldn't bring him in here to be the guy in the basement building these things, right?
That would be like Malcolm McDowell instead of Anthony.
No, he's too important of an actor to he just can't have a small role. Unless that's the twist that they're just trying to throw us off the scent. Yeah. But I think him and the Man in Black have some connection somewhere down the line.
That's a good theory. That's a good crack. Listen,
thank you for taking all my thunder, Ethan.
No, I think you still brought enough to it. I will be the first to criticize you, but I think you brought enough more to it.
All right.
So that is your
crackpot theory, and I'm sticking to it.
All right.
I'll still stick to it.
All right, guys, that is it for our first episode. Thank you for listening, Mike. Fantastic work, sir. Super excited to have you on the show.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you. This has been great to sort of parse out these theories. I'm definitely ready to put Jack / Ethan's theory in my pocket as we sort of make our way down the dusty road that is this season and to see what questions and other theories may come about as a result. I can't wait to listen back to this at the end of the season and know how completely wrong we were about every single thing we suggested.
You never go back and listen to those.
No, you just wait until people on social media point it out to you, right?
Oh, yeah. They'll do it once in a while.
Oh, man. But again, if you'd like to give us a call, you can do so at 385-309-0311.
Playtime.
And you can give us an email to westworldjjm@gmail.com. I want to send a special thanks to our patrons that make this show possible, especially Eckhard Richter, Tack from Tokyo, and Brad from Chicago. If you'd like to become a patron, you can do so today by going to patreon.com/janejack or janejack.com and click on the Become a Patron link. Mike, you are a prolific podcaster. Do you want to plug your many, many great works that you do and where other people
can
find you?
Sure. There's a good amount of them. If you're a fan of reality television, you can find me doing a bunch of stuff on Rob Has a Podcast and Reality TV Wrap-Ups. I also cover TV for the scripted portion of Rob Has a Website's big satellite network of podcasts, which is at Post Show Recaps. There I cover mainly Once Upon a Time, but I do a bunch of other coverage as well. I just did a big podcast about the Emmys a couple weeks ago. I do the Survivor Historians podcast, which takes a look back at Survivor. Again, if you're a big reality TV fan and a fan of general zaniness, that's a fun one. And if you're a fan of overanalyzation of weird films, take a look at a movie podcast I do called The Hamster Factor, where myself and AJ Mass, who's also a podcaster and a writer for ESPN, he shows me a movie that I've never seen before, and we talk for way too long about it and gauge my general thoughts about it and his personal history on it. It's a lot of fun to sort of see how our opinions differ and what I think about the movie in hindsight as opposed to placing it in the history of film. So there's a lot to check out there, but I hope you do because they're so much fun to do, this one included.
When do you sleep?
Never do. I'm the robot. This is a big reveal. Screw the flies.
And there's also I'm sure there's going to be a lot of different Westworld podcasts out there. But from what I understand, Joe Pinionated or Joe Garfine and Wiggler of the Wiggle Room fame is doing one as well, and I feel like, should we say ours is going to be better than theirs?
It already is.
I guess in the metaphoric showdown at the OK Podcast Corral, we drew first.
But yes,
we're Man in Black and they're Teddy.
But yes, Joe and Josh, good friends of the show. I feel like we got to come up with some way to talk crap about them every single week or have some type of way to compete with them on a weekly basis. I don't know how we're going to do it. I don't know how we'll get there, but we should do something.
We have 9 more episodes to figure it out, and then hopefully 5 more seasons after that.
Yes. But should be a lot of fun. I'm really excited to talk about this season. Any final words, gentlemen, before we close out the show?
No, I'm just ready to get into a deep sleep.
Nice. Action Jackson?
I'm just glad I enjoyed the show. Because you never know when you go in blind. Remember, we've done a few where you go, oh, can't wait to podcast about this show. Oh, this show's terrible.
What? I don't want to say leftovers like that, but the first season was so depressing.
It was depressing. It was like, oh, okay, I got to get
But then second season was like the best season of TV ever. So like it can't balance itself out. But I agreed. It's this. You never know with a new show.
It's no V. That's all I'm going to say.
It's no V. But yeah. All right, guys. Well, that is it for our first episode. We will see you next week after the second episode. Definitely get in your feedback. Love to discuss the show with you as well. Until then, hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.